Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today on Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, I'm here with Dan Collins, co-founder and assistant coach of the Chesapeake Fencing Club in Baltimore City, Maryland. The thing he says is sometimes called physical chess because it's so demanding mentally, and he's here to tell us why. Joining us is my brother, sports psychology expert, Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
And hi, Patrick.
Hi, Lisa.
So now let's talk a little bit about fencing being sometimes being called physical chess. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. As a matter of fact, there is a fencing supply company called Physical Chess. So it's a term that fencers have come to hear. I've also heard that fencing has been described as sort of playing chess at like 500 miles an hour. And it's all kind of basically the same thing because chess, of course, is known as being a very much a cerebral game, a game of strategy, pitting you against an opponent. They always say the best chess players are the ones that are thinking several moves ahead. So as they make each move, they're anticipating what their opponent's going to do, and they're trying to set them up in some way or another so they can, you know, win the game. Well, it's very much the same way in fencing. When you face your opponent, you're looking for certain susceptibilities, things that they're going to be vulnerable to. And this is true in all three weapons, which are foil, saber, and épée. We start all fencers out with foil because foil is really the most demanding of the three. So if you can handle foil, generally you're going to handle the other two weapons well. But so, for example, if I was fencing someone with foil and I might put my weapon out, what we say, putting out a line to see what kind of reaction I get from my opponent. And if I see him make a very big, sudden arm motion to parry, then I might say that, well, okay, he may be susceptible to what we call a feint attack, which is where I put out a line looking like I'm going to attack a certain area, draw the parry, and then disengage going under the blade, or coupang, which is going over the blade. But then again, if I put out a line and I don't get a reaction, then I said, okay, well, maybe that's not going to work, and I need to try some other different approach. Now, the thing is, while I'm doing this, my opponent is attempting to do the same thing to me, saying what I'm susceptible to, what my weaknesses are. And, of course, this is all happening very, very quickly. And so that's why it's sometimes called physical chess, because you're doing a lot of the same things mentally, again, kind of thinking ahead. Now, if I do this, will he do that, and then he'll do this, and then I'll do that, kind of moving ahead, seeing how it's going to play out. It's all happening mentally, but it's also happening very, very physically because you're not sitting at a chessboard. You're on a fencing strip, moving very fast. As a matter of fact, I think I heard that the tip of a tip of a foil or tip of any kind on any of the blades, foil, saber, épée, is the second fastest moving object in sports. Now, the next question is, what's the fastest moving object? That I don't know. But I have heard it's the second fastest moving object in sports. So you've got to be able to react quickly.
Really, really interesting. Now, Patrick, so what does this mean for the mental game?
Well, it means that you have to train yourself, from my perspective, Dan, you have to train yourself to learn all your moves so that they're reflexive, because it doesn't allow you time to think. If the foil is moving, the tip of the foil is moving that quickly, the only chance you're going to have is to react. So what we tell parents of young athletes and coaches is that kids need to overlearn their skills, practice their skills so that they're repetitive, they're reflexive, they're a term called automaticity, so they can do it automatically. And I use a term which probably relates a lot to your sport, go from your eyes to your hands and skip everything in between, which means you don't think. You look and you react. So the second piece of that is kids – and athletes have to be in a mindset to quiet their minds and be receptive to just trusting in their skills that they practiced. thereby they're taking out a lot of the extra thinking. It's like, you know, with a fastball that takes less than a half a second from the pitcher to the plate, two-tenths of that is taken up to move the bat to meet the ball. So you have about two-tenths of a second to really decide on whether it's a good pitch or not. And in that situation, you have to just simply react based upon your experience and what you've trained yourself to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And working with some of our youth fencers, you know, I'll tell them that the best way to be successful in fencing, you know, the best way to train for it, is to fence. Because the more often you fence, you know, the more you'll begin to pick up these things. My first coach used to tell me that the three most important things in fencing were footwork, footwork, and footwork. Mm-hmm. In other words, his point was that you can have the best blade work in the world in terms of how you're moving the weapon and so forth, but if you're not within the proper distance to take advantage of it, then you're not going to go anywhere. And so it's like, well, how are you supposed to know what the proper distance is? How do you know whether you're too close or too far away, or when you're in the right distance to make your attack? Well, really the best way to learn how to do that is by fencing, and it becomes automatic. And when I go out on the strip, I've been fencing for 23 years, I'm not thinking, well, I need to be so many feet away or anything. I don't have to. I just know instinctively from having practiced and done this for so long what the distance is going to be. Now, it can be challenging for young people because they have, you know, borrowing a line from Yoda, you must unlearn what you have learned, because kids will come in with preconceived notions about what they think fencing is going to be from seeing movies like Star Wars and so forth, and mm-hmm. they'll want to attack the blade a lot, as we put it. They'll want to slap the blade together, and we have to make them unlearn that and realize that that's actually what you're trying to avoid. You don't want to touch the blade. You want to get around the blade. You don't want to have it contact with the blade. You want to hit target. So getting them to unlearn these habits, the tendency to want to hold the weapon like a club, to make large actions with the arm, to make big actions moving forward and backwards, things that are telegraphing what you're doing, which makes it easy for your opponent to defend, all that has to be unlearned first so they can learn the proper way to do it. And the best way to learn is by doing it over and over and over again. And the more they fence, the more they integrate it and becomes part of them. And what's most interesting is that I have found in working with kids who had never picked up a blade before, and we would do demonstrations and would pick kids to come up and try it out, you could almost see them, without them even realizing it, that they were picking this up. They you sort of see the wheels turning in their mind about what they needed to do as we were just teaching them the basics. I kind of compare it to that the old cereal commercial about, it's good for them, but they don't realize it. You know, they're having fun, but they don't realize they're actually building their minds, you know, and educating themselves and disciplining themselves at the same time. So it's a great sport as far as that goes, but it definitely does play a role in terms of strengthening mental discipline. You mentioned about the importance of kind of quieting your mind, and you really do need to be able to do that to be effective as a fencer. You can't let your mind wander. You can't be thinking about other things, because that's a great way to get hit. But I do want to make the point that, you know, whilst all these things do become instinctive and automatic, you are still thinking on the strip. I mean, I often find that I perform the worst when I'm just reacting rather than not taking time to think. Because, again, as you're playing chess, you need to be able to be observing what's happening. So in other words, some parts of what you're doing do become instinctive, but other parts do not, because every opponent is different. And how they're going to be, you know, what their game is, you have to pick up, you know, what their particular game is, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and the only way you can do that is by being cognizant and having your mind in the game. So, yes, some of it does become reactive, but a lot of it is not. So it's probably one of the most difficult sports that there is, and we don't want to say things that discourage kids from trying fencing if they think it's too hard, because from our point of view, because it's so hard, that's what makes it great. So those people who, you know, stick with it can really come to excel with it. There's a saying that there are no dumb fencers, and I say that if you think you're dumb, fencing will make you smart, because it's designed to develop your mind and strengthen your mind. So it is a very challenging sport. I've had adults tell me that it's like the hardest thing they've ever done. But, you know, it's like anything. The harder it is, the more you wind up loving it, and more you wind up wanting to stick with it. So, you know, that's another mental aspect of the game.
Now, you mentioned that especially for younger kids, there's a psych factor.
Oh, yes.
Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. And that's true really of all fencers, young or old, but young in particular, because young people are not as generally not as emotionally mature as adults are going to be. So they have a tendency to let their emotions get ahead of them. I know at one club there's a sign that says something about, the worst time to lose your head and open your mouth is when you're on the fencing strip, shut up and fence, because kids will get very emotional and they'll want to start yelling about a call they didn't like or something they think is wrong, and you've got to, if you get emotionally upset, you're going to get beat. So we talk to kids about the fact that, first to be aware of that for themselves, but also to know that the mental aspect and the psychological aspect is a tool they can use to help them be successful on the strip. And I'll give you an example of that, one that actually happened to me. I'm 47 years old. Most fencers, in terms of their, in being truly great in this sport, you look at Olympians and national champions, they peak in their late teens, somewhere between 19 and 22 years old. So I'm what's called a veteran. So I'm an old guy, which means that, I've got to be able to use my mind out on the strip because I can't compete with these young guys in terms of their speed and their stamina. So I was competing in a tournament against about a 16-year-old who was much faster than I was and certainly a better physical specimen. But I noticed, trying to take advantage of what I knew, but I was having some difficulties, and we were in a 15-touch elimination bout, and I was losing about 9-3 at the time. And one of my fencing cohorts during one of the breaks in the action said, what you need to do is get in this kid's head. Start doing things, do what I have a little tactic I call the rope-a-dope, which is basically where I open myself up for attack. In other words, I sort of drop my weapon and say, here I am, hit me. And sometimes that can throw off a fencer. You get sort of what I call the deer caught in headlights look, because suddenly there's this target available to them and they don't know what to do. And he said, start playing around on the strip, jump around, do the rope-a-dope, open up. He'll start to imitate you and it'll throw him off his own game. So I did. I started moving around, and of course the kid is kind of like, what's this old man doing bouncing around like this and open up target area? And he started like mocking me and doing the exact same thing. Well, when he did that, he lost the track of his own game, and I wound up winning the bout 15-11 after being down 9-3. So the point was, I wasn't beating him on a physical level. I couldn't. He's just, 16-year-olds can go all day. I'm a guy in his 40s. So I had to use the psychological element to beat him, and I did, by basically getting into his head. And so we tell the kids, try to do the same thing. If the physical part isn't working for you, or you're dealing with an opponent who, you see has a tendency to be that way, has a tendency to be emotional, you want to try to take advantage of that, because you need every little edge you can out there on the strip in order to win.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
Not at all. It was my pleasure.
To listen to the rest of this audio, visit kidssportspsychology.com.